die Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission Longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione Lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called Wavelength.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm William English, and today's guest is Bill Burns once again. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, William.
Thank you for coming in. You are the director of safety gear for small animals, amongst other things.
That's right.
You've dropped the title Director of Museum of Safety Gear for Small Animals. What's happened to the museum?
Well, that was really a misnomer from the get-go. The museum is still out there. It's an itinerant museum, but it's actually one of the components of Safety Gear for Small Animals.
Right, okay. I should explain that Bill has a slight cold, so we're expecting coughs and sneezes throughout this program. Thank you. You're passing through on the way to Denmark from Toronto. You're here just for a few days, 4 days or something in London.
That's right.
What's happening in Denmark?
I'm going to be an artist in residence at the Danish Arts Agency in Copenhagen. And I'm doing some work about dogs and modern furniture and democracy over there.
Okay.
And then I'll be going up into northern Denmark after a bit of research in Copenhagen, and I'll be working with some students at the Krabbesholm School of Art, Architecture, and Design, and we're going to try and put together an exhibition. Well, we're committed to putting together an exhibition there
on the theme of dogs and modern furniture
and democracy. That's right.
How do dogs fit into this, and modern furniture?
Well,
and democracy.
It's a little bit up in the air at this point, but I'm planning to. I've been working a lot with how dogs fit in with in our culture and into different cultures, and I have a large kind of body of photography about dogs in different places, and it started to occur to me that. There's something about the texture of different cultures and the way that they treat their dogs that has more to do with the culture and the society than it has to do with the dogs. So that's...
Okay.
And then I have... it's developed into a photographic project and a few other spin-off projects that are about dogs and boats and airplanes. So again, the kind of there's kind of slightly tangential connections to the ideas of democracy, and I like to kind of conflate ideas of civil, sort of the tropes of civil society into our relations with animals. So,
okay, now we've got three films on DVD. You've made three short films. Can you run us through what are they?
They're films that use my character called the Deer Man, and he's a man who has a deer's head, and he wears a suit and tie, and he tells stories. Well, he's a writer. He often takes notes and types on his laptop, and he's so he does a lot of writing of letters. So these are our stories. The first one is called Machine Guts.
Machine Guts.
Yeah, and the these are collaborative films with my friend and collaborator Christina Zeidler, and she's an artist in Toronto.
Right.
And so the scripts are the mise-en-scène is collaborative, the stories are collaborative, and then either myself or Christina writes the script, and then we work on the film.
So the deer man is you with a deer's head on, a sort of rubber deer's
yes,
head.
Yes, that's right.
And you feature in all these films.
I do, yes.
So shall we hear the first soundtrack
play,
of Machine Guts?
Machine Guts, it's about 2.5 minutes, I think.
Okay. There might be a brief pause at the beginning of the film.
You might want to describe the scene if you...
Okay. So the title card shows a book with the word Machine Guts on it, sort of spiral bound.
Anne works in retail in a mall. She folds, stacks, and sells sweaters for work and casual wear to women who, like herself, blow their paychecks on ill-fitting, socially appropriate clothes. On her breaks, she joins her usual group of smoking allies, women older than herself, who have been working years in malls and department stores. She is not part of their inner circle, but they good-humoredly tease her about men and compliment her outfits, letting her bask in the temporary fantasy of being who they see. While they complain of the intricate complications of their home lives, she fades out of focus and lets the conversation wash over her. After her breaks, she leaves the dim glow of the food court for the hyperfluorescent landscape of her conspicuously casual workplace, with its oversized plants, strategic mirrors, and cheap couches. Here she folds an endless pile of silicone-smelling sweaters until it's time to go home. One night she drops a sweater on the floor. When she stoops to pick it up, she notices the immaculately polished hardwood floor. Pausing, she wonders why they would spend so much money on hardwood when they have so obviously cheaped out on everything else. It is probably prefab wood, she thought, bending closer to inspect the pattern on the floor, looking for repetitions. She checks each knot to see if its minute and intricate pattern is repeated somewhere else on the floor. At first, it seems easy to tell, but just when she feels she has sure proof of its fakeness, the wood appears unique in some delicate way. Then, just as quick, she notices a repeat pattern, and doubt creeps in. On the way home that night, she looks at everything in this light, wondering if everything in her environment is manufactured or individual in its makeup. She scrutinizes the bus, the leather, the movie which the passing scenery creates in her mind, the toy poodle, and its dour master. Looking down at her own body, she wonders if, in fact, she too has been manufactured. She had never noticed how similar the patterns of lines in her palms were. When she held them together, how they fit like three-dimensional wallpaper texture, and how impossible it would be to duplicate such intricacy if not for the aid of a machine. She finds herself in a limbo state which she cannot break, and which she comes to quietly live with. She continues to work at the mall, to smoke cigarettes at break, all the while folding sweaters.
So that was that's Machine Guts, and the imagery of throughout the film is a man with a deer's head at a typewriter, well, at a laptop computer, in a sort of darkened room. And the text, is the text by your collaborator? Or?
The text is by my collaborator, Christina, and we shot that at the Banff Center for the Arts, so we had a kind of state-of-the-art studio to work with. So it's a long tracking shot, and it comes in, so it's really kind of the kind of tracking shot that you can do in big TV and movie house mm-hmm. productions, but the track, but we set it up as an eight millimeter film, so it has a kind of mixture of textures.
It's not obvious. It isn't obvious from the image that there is a tracking shot, is it? Or is it just me, the way I'm looking at it? I mean, the image seems to remain static. You've got the deer's head in profile. I can't see any movement as such.
Well, the camera tracks towards the deer. So the first shot, the deer man is... looks very small.
Uh-huh.
And he gets bigger as the shot goes.
Okay.
So it is a long, it's a very long, as tracking shots go, it's very long.
Right.
So
why a deer's head? Is there a significance for that?
Well, I think, I don't think there's any significance to that. I think it was kind of looking for something that was absurd or a little bit stupid. And and then figuring out, but also, I guess, looking for something that might work with the idea of simulation and representation and the whole idea of what the deer man is talking about there, which is...
But is it anything to do with Canadian identity, the fact that it's... Because I know you, in your earlier paintings, you've featured paddles quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So there often seems to be a connection with Canada.
I think there is something there, perhaps, that we are, there's a certain kind of connection that we like to try and find with nature and stuff like that. But Canada's kind of a strange country that has I think out of all the countries in the world, all the industrial countries, and which would mean that any country in the world, is the most urbanized country. More people in Canada, it's almost twice as urbanized as United States, for instance, meaning that, the statistics that I know are that Canadians live in cities of 250,000 or more twice as often as Americans do per capita. So so it's kind of something. It's a bit of a surprise to some people to learn that Canadians are actually the very urban.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a paradox of Canadian life that we kind of think of ourselves as kind of like hairy natural guys. So,
okay. Well, should we play another soundtrack? Maybe there's three films. One is called Swan Lake, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which features you again with the deer's head on, what would you call that? Like a small boat in the shape of a swan.
Yeah, that's right. Should we play Swan Lake?
We could do.
Or
what's the other one?
The other one's called Reverse. That's the deer man is in a bar and he's writing about. His voice is speaking about his first sexual experience.
Okay.
Or perhaps her first sexual experience.
Let's go for that one. Slight pause again of the... all of these films sort of have a 30-second section, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So this scene shows the deer man seated at a bar wearing quite a loud tie, actually. Is that like a sort of 50s painted tie?
It is, yes.
Yeah. And
he's being served two glasses of draft.
Yeah.
Or is it three?
So is it shot on location in a bar?
Yes, it's shot on location at the Gladstone Hotel in Toronto, which is a pretty typical big karaoke bar. But it was built in the late 19th century.
I'm lying on my back in this boy's bedroom. I am 22, and I feel old to be having sex for the first time. I have not told my new boyfriend. I am too embarrassed and just want it to be over with. I do not feel uncomfortable, a little nervous, but he is so determined. He is making it happen. Left up to me, I just might avoid this awkward moment, this first time. The room is glowing red from all the candles. Dollar store Catholic Virgin candles spread strategically around his bedroom. The old apartment in Montreal looks a lot like mine, only reverse. I am his neighbor on the other side. His face is concentrated, and it also glows red from the candlelight. I am anticipating the moment of having my hymen broken. How much it will hurt. If he will be able to tell. He does it. It hurts a lot, but my face is pointed towards the ceiling, and his face is buried in my shoulder. So I don't think he notices. Suddenly, it does not feel like such a big deal. It's nothing really, and I don't feel that different. I still feel embarrassed that I waited so long. I don't tell him anything.
Okay. What was the name of that one?
That was called Reverse.
Reverse. Okay. And throughout that, the it's you in the suit, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
With the deer's head.
Mm-hmm.
And you do kind of strange things like you scratch the ear of the deer's head as though you could feel things in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Which you obviously can't, but you're you're giving the impression that the deer has sort of sensations.
Yeah, that's right. And I try and get into character that way with a bit of scratching and.
Right. And okay.
I should tell you about I recently saw a video by a young artist named Miles Collier, and. It reminded me a little bit of this series, but Miles has taken, he's made a video called, it's actually a whole TV series, and it's called a TV show where all the characters are headless. And what he's done is he's got lumberjack shirts on all the characters, and then they just stuff them with newspapers so that they look like torsos with no heads.
Right.
And then they grunt. They only do like grunting and rudimentary movements,
right?
But the scenario is it like a situation comedy, and it has all the tropes of a situation comedy, and you can actually believe that that there is a situation taking place
with headless people.
But they're headless people who can only grunt and stuff.
Right.
Which indicates the kind of level of situation comedy.
All right. Well, we could move on to your next project, which sounds fascinating, actually. It's called Dogs and Boats and Airplanes Children's Choir. What's the story? And Bill is now showing me a little pencil sketch in a notebook, which sort of shows something like the Hollywood Bowl, almost, with a conductor and a choir of children. So what's going on, Bill? You're actually assembling a choir.
Yes, I've just started. In the fall, I started a pilot project with the school in Toronto, and we're putting together the what I think is the world's first dogs and boats and airplanes children's choir, and it's a choir of 9 to 11-year-olds, maybe a couple 12-year-olds as well. And the repertoire is all nonverbal, and we're just making the sounds of dogs and boats and airplanes. And we're trying to develop a collaborative repertoire so the children are involved in developing the sequential and narrative aspects of the repertoire. And now we're in the process of building the choir into a 100-voice choir, which we're pretty sure will be the world's largest Dogs and Boats and Airplanes Children's Choir.
So what do we call them? The choristers imitate the sounds of dogs, boats, and airplanes.
That's right. So it's like a lot of there's fog horns, there's barking, there's a lot of sniffing and grunting as well, and they have there's F-18s, Cessnas.
And they imitate these specifically? So one of the singers would try and imitate the sound of a Cessna 18.
Yeah, and in some cases there's different sections are doing lapping of waves on the shore,
right.
While the other section is doing a foghorn, for instance, and that's where 100 voices will come in.
Right.
Handy as well. The bigger, it'll add to the.
And again, why is it dogs, boats, and airplanes in this case?
Well, I guess it's a bit of a long story. I started collecting salt and pepper shakers of dogs and boats and airplanes, and the collection became a little bit of a storage problem. In our house, and then in my studio as well, and then I had to start. I had to bring some of my collection of salt and pepper shakers, and did I mention the tea towel collection as well?
No,
I have a tea towel collection as well of salt and pepper of dogs and boats and airplanes, and in any case, there became a gigantic. Collection and the storage was becoming a problem, especially for my my girlfriend, who I sometimes call my wife, but we're not married. And then when my stepdaughter started getting sick, it became more and more of a storage problem because we needed extra furnishings for her illness. So in any case.
How do the police come into this?
Well, I've been writing to the police about the situation. I've been writing to two police departments. One is the New York City Police Department, and the other is the Ontario Provincial Police Department.
Yeah,
trying to convince them of the beauty and charm of this collection, and also trying to make them understand that it's a natural fit with the police department. So far I haven't been able to convince them because...
Do they reply?
I have had some responses, but they haven't been particularly positive yet. But the gist of it is that... Dogs and boats and airplanes are used by those police departments on a daily basis, and so it's a natural fit that they should want to acquire them for their collection.
Right.
Apparently, the problem that I hadn't anticipated was that they don't actually have collections.
Okay. I think we need to wind up on that note, Bill. Thank you very much to Bill Burns, Director of Safety Gear for Small Animals, coming in, who has an exhibition coming up in Denmark and also in Los Angeles, I think.
That's right.
Next year.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to wind up with a track by a fellow Canadian called Rodney Graham, who you know him. You've met him a few times.
Yeah, Rodney. I saw Rodney play a few times in the old days in Vancouver, and he played in a band with Jeff Wall and Ian Wallace. Called the U-Jerks back in the day in Vancouver.
Okay.
And
well, this track is called So-Called Friends from a CD called Rodney Graham, or it might be The Bedbug, Love Buzz, and Other Short Songs in the Popular Idiom.
We'll be right back. again I see these hedgerows, hardly hedgerows, little lions.